CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We also use AI to synthesize a lot of the data that we're pulling in from different places. Every creator in the future will have an agent that allows them to action that data. Everyone is going to have AI as the sixth man in their team to get some of this stuff done. It's really left up to your creative interpretation of what you can do with it. And we're just going to be the distributor for it.
Avery, we're back again. Gen Z, episode 72, I think, although I always get the numbers wrong. So great to see you. Avery, I sent you a link, I think it was yesterday, the day before, which was a short movie made entirely in OpenAI's Sora. For anyone who doesn't know, Sora is a video generative platform where you just put a prompt in and it generates 30 seconds of video for you. And someone took a bunch of those 30 second clips. The clip is called Airheads. We'll put it in the show notes for you. But I thought it was actually quite a moving little film about a guy living his life with a balloon for a head. And I wanted to know what you thought when you saw it and knowing that the entire footage was generated by AI.
I was not surprised that the entire footage was generated by AI because I think you know this, but we've been power users of Runway for some time. We love Runway and we've been demonstrating things like this for a while, sometimes bringing it into live productions when legal will let us. And I'll unpack what I mean by that comment in a second. But I think enabling normal users to have access to these tools is amazing. And to me, there's a lot of creative opportunity here. I do think that we still are facing a number of ambiguous legal implications. And of course, we are above the letter of the law at Vayner. And where, for example, even if I dictated that script, et cetera, the sourcing of the imagery and video and even things like pacing and stylization, it's just not exactly clear where that's coming from in all contexts. And a lot of these incredible AI providers, they don't stand behind exactly where that came from. It came from the internet. And that's a very sort of broad comment. Practical reality of that, at least for my world of enterprise brands, is we cannot fire off things like that quite yet unless we're really super clear on exactly where that inspiration is coming from and have all the right rights about it.
Agreed. And I think the fact is every one of us was trained on the internet, but we're not trying to monetize everything we ever learned like an OpenAI is or a Google Gemini is. But I thought it was a great first step, something that like felt clever and emotional, which was the first time I had seen Sora do that for me. Additionally,
I want to understand that. Why is that on Sora and not on the person prompting Sora?
Well, I'm saying the person prompting Sora was key here because there's probably 8 scenes that make up this 90-second film.
Yes.
And those 8 scenes all have a continuity that is actually not the easiest thing to get out of AI. As someone who's done a lot of prompting, I've had to get really down into like seed levels about whether or not I could have a consistency of visual output without training it on my own model. So I do think that the person prompting is the creator here for sure. And Sora is the tool that was used. I also think that you put some melancholy piano music, you put a voiceover, and you put 8 clips in a row and you can probably tell almost any story that you want, regardless if it's made in Sora. It was just the thing that I think when I saw the original Sora outputs that were being shared on social, I was like, some of these are good, but we're never going to see a full movie. I still don't think we'll see a full movie like this, but I think doing a short 90-second creative expression.
Sam, I want to clip that because we're going to have this conversation in 12 to 24 months and there will be a full feature film that was all done by AI.
I'm going to hold you to that as well. And we're going to see if it's a good film. I don't know if you saw it.
Say it was a good film. I said,
no,
it was
understood. Understood. And I think someone is going to try and do that. I saw that thing that went all over Twitter yesterday about I think it's called Arc Ads, which is an AI ad pitch person that you can basically get, which also still feels very Uncanny Valley to me. It feels a little off, but it does mean if I was a commercial actor, I would also be worried about all this stuff. But I still think something feels off about all of it. And so again, I liked this. This is the thing I liked most, I would say, in how people have utilized AI media, because I am a skeptic about it. But to your point, yes, someone will do a 90-minute film. We'll see if it's good or bad, and then we'll judge from there. With that, Avery, we have some guests in our waiting room that we're going to get to. So we have Natalie Bress and Michelle Sanchez, both from Myth.io. Myth is a really interesting creator platform that is working with high-end talent, reimagine fandoms, relationships. It utilizes under-the-hood Web3 technology, but they're also dabbling in AI and a lot of other stuff. And Natalie also works at Range Media, which represents some of the highest-powered talent in Hollywood on the acting, directing, writing side. So they know what these folks want to do, and they know how big and vibrant those communities are. So they're going to tell us all about Myth when we get back. Consensus 2024. Global crypto regulation, the disruptive power of AI, the rise of tokenization. Consensus is the one event where experts convene to talk about the ideas shaping our digital future. Join developers, investors, founders, brands, policymakers, and plenty more in Austin, Texas from May 29th through the 31st. The 10th annual Consensus is curated by CoinDesk to feature the industry's most sought-after speakers and provide unparalleled networking opportunities and unforgettable experiences. Take 15% off registration with the code GENC15. Register now at consensus.coindesk.com, and I'll see you there.
Such a pleasure to have these wonderful ladies on today. Michelle and Natalie, thank you for being with us on Gen C.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start by just hearing a little bit about you. Maybe Natalie, we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about who is Natalie Bress and how did you get onto this podcast today?
I became super fascinated by all of the technology that was going to transform the space. I've been working on how digital can enable future of fandom pretty much my whole career. Started as a kind of trend forecaster at the big talent agencies was where I began my career as like a lowly assistant. And then always tried to, I think, see around the corner for what was going to happen as it related to technology empowering the future of entertainment and fandom. And I think those things are more closely linked to today than they ever have been. The idea is that creators have their own distribution and can control that relationship with their audience has always been central to my career. So I spent a little bit of time doing that trend forecasting space and then actually got into venture capital. And similarly, always trying to connect the dots between venture-backed technology and how creators and the entertainment industry could use those two things to fuse together a pathway to have more direct relationships between creators, creatives, and their audiences. And during COVID, a bunch of us got together and I became one of the first managing partners of Range, which is a boutique management firm and production company focused on really empowering generational talents to unlock more value in their relationships with their audiences. And at Range, I focus on leading strategic innovation and client strategy. There's a big joke amongst the folks at Range that I look after a lot of the off the menu items. So spent the first couple of years building out our data and insights arm. Now we help a lot of our entrepreneurial clients shape legacy building businesses. And then obviously, because I believe so deeply in the power of technology to sort of enable that direct connection, it naturally spun into blockchain, Web3, AI, generative AI, how we can use that for workflows, and I think fan loyalty in general. And so how can we really help these sort of transformative talents of our time future-proof their careers by skating where the puck is going in terms of AI technology and sort of the things that are going to underpin those rails for them to have stronger, more understanding relationships with their audiences.
Amazing. But you touched a little bit on the different dimensions of your career from working at the agency to venture capitalist to entrepreneur. And you didn't mention some of the big name talents who you represent and have worked with and helped build their empires and careers over the years. Could you give us a little taste of who some of those figures might be?
Yeah, I think Range's clients are some of the most smart, dynamic creatives out there. Over my career, I've certainly worked with a ton. One of the earliest that we actually did a ton of fan loyalty work around was actually like Pee Wee Herman back in the day. And so the idea was you had to run around and do what was like early POAP tech when he was doing a day in New York to unlock the first ever talent badge on Foursquare, which was a Pee Wee Herman badge. And if you had the badge, you could unlock early access to tickets. We sold $1 million for tickets for this Broadway show that he was doing in the first day only to the loyal group of super fans. We weren't calling it token gated at the time, but that's where the technology was taking us. And I think saw early on not only the power of having a really engaged fandom, but also how owning your IP, which was something that Paul was always incredibly passionate about and owned everything he ever did, what the power of that is for talent that really want to have a legacy defining relationship with their audiences.
Natalie, I did go to see that Pee Wee Herman show on Broadway.
You did?
I did.
It was incredible. He was a master. Good. I did not actually watch the show growing up. I only got to know him as a client and thought that he was one of the most creative guys out there. But now at Range, some of the sort of publicly named clients of the company, earliest ones were Bradley Cooper, Gabrielle Union, Michael Fassbender. More recently, people like Jack Harlow, Halle Berry.
Casual.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a privilege to work with talent because they truly are some of the most creative people. And the fact that we get to help them unlock their vision, whether it be across their entrepreneurial efforts or their creative ambitions, is such an incredible honor. And I think we feel a real responsibility with some of these defining minds of our time to help make sure that they are able to architect their careers in the way that they want and without having to go through as many middlemen. Michelle and I talk about what if we replace middlemen with conduits? And I think that's really where we see our responsibility is to help look around the corner for them and bring them opportunities that reflect the way that the media landscape is changing pretty dramatically.
And Michelle, you're no slouch. You've done a lot for the last bunch of years. I know you focused on experiential and DTC and events. Give us your like quick background and then just tell us what Myth is.
Sure thing. The background is very much akin to Natalie's in that always thinking about the future and how technologies commingle with the now. For 20 years, I produced events all over the world, primarily launched my career in marketing and programming of entertainment venues and festivals in Miami. Made my way to Singapore, opened Marina Bay Sands out there, did a big F1 festival. Really got my hands dirty on what is the creative business side of things. If you can name a venue, I probably opened it or marketed it or booked talent through it. And so really going direct to consumer from an experience perspective was always at the crux of everything that I did. Even when I worked for WeWork, we were creating community around spaces. When I worked for Sundance, it was really about new frontier technologies around film and television. And then at Reef Technologies, which was right before we co-founded Myth, it was the pandemic and we were starting to see brands like Mr. Beast and DJ Khaled's another wing use ghost kitchens as a way to distribute their brands and sort of their celebrity. And so our other co-founder, Maddie Ayers and I, we spoke about what would it look like in the metaverse if you had, you know, a central place to distribute orders for, let's say you're playing in Fortnite and you wanted to deliver another wing to somebody in China while you're in LA, what would that look like? And that sort of spun the wheel of us getting together with Natalie. And here we are almost 2 years to the date later with this beautiful product, Myth, which if I can segue into that, is really a fan engagement platform powered by frontier technologies. I think what we're doing is we're building the frameworks for what it looks like in the future when artists, brands, and individuals own their network. Effectively, it's giving you basically all the tooling that you're accustomed to using in social today with a little bit more direct-to-consumer capabilities without the middleman. And to Natalie's point, Myth is simply the conduit. So we're not there to censor. We're not there to be the police or the watchdog over things. We're giving you all of this technology so that you can do what you do best, which is connect meaningfully and with intention with the folks that are advocating or building upon your career.
Because that's what artists want. They want to understand and to know their audiences. They want to be able to surprise and delight their super fans. And for whatever reason, I think when people were building kind of the Web 2.0 structures, they just didn't give artists access to that information. Even now, there's a music artist that we work with that I listened to his music a ton in the early days of us representing him. And I got like a note from one of the streaming platforms saying, congratulations, you're in so-and-so's top 2% of fans. I was like, amazing. I forwarded this to his day-to-day manager. I was like, this is so fantastic. What do they tell you about these people? Where do they live? How often are they consuming the music? What are their favorite songs? And the answer is, for a lot of these people, nothing. They're happy to let you use their pipes to relate to their fans. But we have another client who directed her first film on Netflix and really wanted to send a note to everybody who had watched just to say thank you because this was a new medium for her. There's no actual way to do that. We have a third client who's a stand-up comedian and wanted to be able to connect the ticket buyers for his shows with the people that watched his comedy special. Again, no one is giving these artists or their teams access to that information. So they're sort of at a loss for how they can actually do what they're quite passionate about doing, which is encouraging people to become bigger fans by recognizing like their day ones and being able to reward that excitement and engagement. And so we just decided to build Rails to allow them to do that. But it is still, at the end of the day, the artist, especially when you're talking, by the way, about creators who so much of their creative ability is their ability to connect. We just want to create the pathway for them to do that with the people that really would love to be in a subreddit just talking about that person, right? The idea that we can give them access to that data so they can make smarter decisions from it and surprise and delight these people is really exciting.
Yeah, and I think combining both of your abilities is managing and producing sort of big events and experiences and helping talent navigate their careers is really this sort of like secret sauce. And it seems like Web3 also brought you all together a little bit. So let's unpack that. What about Web3 really interests you? What about that read, write, own philosophy drives you to believe that this is the future of fan engagement? And love to hear.
Absolutely. Natalie touched on it, right? Natalie touched on the fact that she doesn't know when and where everything became closed, right? Where we couldn't, the open web at one point was for everyone to have this sort of ability to engage with one another in an open network. And what's happened is that everything has siloed itself into these closed networks with walled gardens. And a lot of this information that would have normally have flowed through and allowed us to maintain our most authentic selves have now become really horrible algorithms and greedy overreach in the networks. And so I think that what we're really trying to attain from this is to democratize that a little bit. We want to be able to express ourselves creatively. Fans do too. And they want to be rewarded and acknowledged for their levels of engagement. If I'm over here in this sort of parsed experience, listening to something, streaming something, watching something, but I'm also buying a movie ticket, or I'm also going to a concert, or I'm also engaging in Reddit, or I'm engaging here, the fan has to go to like 16 different places to do what they want to do, which is to gain acknowledgement from the artist and the relationship, right? So I'm a huge fan of Madonna. Like, I don't want to age myself here, you guys, but I can tell you that I paid top dollar to see her and I cried and I laughed and I remembered the last 20 years of her companionship. And today we are being funneled artists and music and movies in a way where we don't get to have that deeper relational, emotional connection. And by way of myth, it is a platform for you to storytell that relationship. It is a platform for you to have much more integrated and meaningful companionship with people of your other tribe, with the creators that want to take the time to engage with you and prepare initiatives and campaigns that are tailored for you.
I will say that I am old enough. I'm not going to ask Michelle her age, but I will admit to being old enough that I remember you would buy an album or a magazine and like on the back of it would be a fan club that you could send a self-addressed stamped envelope to, and you would get some stickers, you get a badge, and then you would really get the opportunity to learn when someone was coming to town and performing, or an actor like a Henry Winkler when he was the Fonz would send you a pin or something like that. And I do think there was something that we didn't get, that there was a primitive to having that direct relationship, because at those times we didn't have Facebook and we didn't have Instagram or TikTok, whether it was the label or the fan club of the artists themselves, a way to keep their fans engaged in ways that made them feel special. Yeah. Now it's, yes, I like their page on social platform, whatever it happens to be, and they dole out highly curated or highly personal information, but it's personal to 10 million. It's personal to 20 million. And I do think looking at what is being built with Myth makes me think of what is the future like when you have your own social network that can say, I'm an artist, I'm a musician, I'm a comedian, whatever it may be. And whether it's 5,000 or 500,000, we can collectively gather around and talk about the things that matter to us. And then also, because this is what communities do, we can also talk about the other things that surround this, whether that's fashion, whether that's the cars we're driving, whatever that happens to be. But you don't have the noise of the mass sort of social network, you really can be more specific. And I guess, is that part of the way that you guys thought Myth could transform those relationships with fans and the talent?
For sure, we get compared to a fan club on steroids, or Discord meets Patreon. But I think that the real power is, we saw this actually when we did our pilot with Jack Harlow last year. His community is called Private Garden. It was a super small pilot with only a kind of a set of six shows that he did that were about him coming home to Kentucky, which is his home state. And for the people that bought a passport in a Private Garden, which supported his charity, had all of these other associated benefits, I have to tell you what we kept hearing from the people that got there early for the pre-parties. They were so excited to meet each other. And this is a great, interesting proof point as you talk about like the increased LTV of the people that are part of these communities. Many of them then went and bought tickets for the second weekend because they all became friends at this first weekend of shows. And they all then kept that conversation going online and they looked forward to seeing each other again a week later. And I think that the dynamic of people feeling like they have these affinity groups or affinity pods, I think becomes this really incredible thing that you bond around. We're seeing it right, by the way, with the Swifties. We're not working with Taylor, but as someone that I remember as one of the futurists, finding her the day that Tim McGraw came out and watching the sort of glob on of the mass fandom of that, you could start a conversation with anybody at a Taylor Swift concert and feel like you have this kind of shared experience already. And I think that what we're hoping is that Myth, and by the way, whether that's a brand affiliated Myth or a talent affiliated Myth or some mix of both, as we're already seeing people ask us about doing, we create that sense of connection that I think really supports the permission to do all these other things with them.
Beautifully put, as always, Natalie. So I'd love to hear a little bit more sort of about Private Garden, which I know was a big success. I remember seeing that across social media and fans were actually posting how excited they were about this. And there were a few in particular that I saw just really got all into the details. Can you tell us a little bit about sort of how that rollout went and maybe some of the reactions that you saw, not just in person, but also across sort of the interwebs?
It was incredible. Jack does a show every year called the No Place Like Home Tour, or a show or set of shows. He changes it up every year. He's a super creative guy. And this year it was six shows all around, not Louisville, but he actually went all around the outermost regions of Kentucky so that he could and performed in a lot of like college venue. It just felt like the most special, really small, intimate, in some cases, probably the smallest venues he's ever going to play, as his single was like taking over the charts. We sold out, which was absolutely incredible, but we keep seeing fans come back for more. So we just did the second sort of iteration of that, the privileges of being a member, which was he's launching his first festival, which is super exciting to be working with an artist that is so committed to owning his creativity and his fandom. Most artists wouldn't go to the step of actually creating their own standalone festival. It's called Gazebo Festival, and it launches in Louisville on the waterfront in May. And what we were able to do is the people that
get your tickets.
But if you're a Private Garden member, you were able to upgrade to VIP. That's the idea of we're going to look after the people that have been day ones, both for that community and sort of Jack fans in general, was very central to, I think, the entire team that worked on that project's ethos of putting together something that would have an incredible charitable impact, but would actually, again, create a forum for these people to bond and form this kind of tribal campfire circle, which is a term that Sarah Wilson, who I think a lot of us on this call know, I think she was one that originally popularized it. And we consulted with her as we were sort of putting together Myth. We consulted with an incredible woman, Victoria Taylor, who was the earliest head of community at Reddit. Like, we really went back to old school community folks rather than like Web3 community managers, which is, I think, a topic that a lot of people sort of borrowed as their title. We wanted to focus on what makes a community incredible and what are the responsibilities of the hosts of those communities, which are really like being the host of a party. What are the elements that actually make something sticky? So again, then you have the permission to offer them things that they can upgrade for, or sort of like you want the permission first to monetize it. You want to have earned the right to do that, which is where I think it, again, goes back to fan clubs and that idea of so many brands push, and I think great creators pull, and they like pull that engagement. They pull that engagement with their audience. And how do we help them, that cycle, feel really good for both sides?
Michelle, before we started this podcast, you gave us a little bit of a preview of some of the stuff that you guys have been building, which has come such a long way since the last time we got a preview. So congratulations on all of that. One of the things that struck me was taking the best sprinkles of all of the different sort of areas of social, whether it's YouTube, whether it's something live streaming, whether it was shopping, whether it's community and conversations. Is that part of the idea, is that most talent has so many different channels in which they have to show up, that is it easier to just create something that feels really hyper curated, that you can be part of their world instead of them having to push out into every other platform?
Yeah. And I mean, let's be honest, none of those other platforms are going anywhere, and they work actually beautifully and cohesively with the intention to migrate your very dedicated audience that wants that level of connectivity to you. And we deem it to be a 1-3% of your sort of total volume of passive viewership followers. The way that we've thought about launching this is really based on human behavior and what we've experienced the last 15, 20 years. We're not trying to take away what you are accustomed to doing. What we're doing is we are giving you those tools so that you can best arm yourself with what you could potentially go direct to consumer with, right? So in essence, something that is approachable, having the ability to go one-to-one with an artist is already so nascent to a fan that having those familiar tools where you can actually share with other folks, how did you experience this? What were you experiencing? What peer-to-peer, find your tribe, and then unlock based on your engagement in real life attendance, the things that you do to show your fandom, let it unlock the perks that it should unlock and the recognition that it should unlock. And something that we're really hyper-focused on at Myth is the loyalty and rewards component of this. So you could think about this in four different ways. Everything that you're doing on platform, everything that you're sharing outbound to connected platforms, everything that you're doing in real life and receiving proof of attendance for, as well as your purchases, are all counting immutably towards your fandom within that particular artist space or brand space. And I think for the first time, we'll start to paint a 360-degree view of the customer in a really meaningful way. It would open up new economic models for creators to own their work holistically. And I do think that the way that we are consuming today, especially on social, is like driving through the information highway and seeing billboards every 3 to 5 seconds, whereas Myth becomes the safe haven for intentional relational connection.
And to own the data around those relationships, right? I worked on a really popular show. We represented the lead of the show. And I definitively remember the call where the studio out-of-home team was deciding which billboards to buy based on the route that this actress drives to the studio so that she would feel the campaign. And so it's why even years before Myth was an idea, we realized that, like, how can we help these artists have night vision goggles about where their fans live? What are the apps on their phone? What are they purchasing? Just so we can do smart, frankly, just smart marketing. And I think giving those tools to them so that they can make smart business decisions, but also I think just smart engagement decisions. It presents an entirely new set of tools that I think most creatives actually get quite excited about because they feel like they're able to unlock. It's all gamified, right? They're just unable to unlock fandom. And we got a lot of questions in the early days when we were fundraising for Myth about, like, well, why does this actually have to be on chain? Couldn't you just do a app for super fans, right? And I think the answer is because the nature of blockchain changes the infrastructure of how the future of fandom is going to be written. And I think that was so key to it. And by the way, I'm just talking to you about artists and their relationship to fans, not to mention what smart contracts do for studio accounting and sort of all of these other things that you hear about. I think making these things verifiable, talking about provenance, like most creatives don't realize like how much under the hood stuff is going to go on behind the scenes. It's going to change the media landscape because of things like blockchain. And so we hope that this is just like one stepping stone to that smarter, more verifiable kind of set of relationships that a creative might have.
You know, it seems like there's a lot to what you just unpacked, but blockchain's been a thing that you all have talked a lot about as being critical to creators sort of owning a more direct channel with fans. And Michelle, to your earlier comment, even being able to directly correspond even digitally with creator, with your favorite musician is relatively a new thing that's just happened in the last generation, the last decade or so. But now here we are in 2024, and it is the era of AI. And as you're thinking of helping your artists and entertainers have night vision goggles, how are y'all thinking about, you know, incorporating that? Does Myth use AI today? What's your take there?
very much thinking about AI in a creative context. So folks that are using things like Sora, Runway, et cetera, to create new works could very well be the lead creators on Myth tomorrow through the ability to directly distribute on Myth entirely. So we're excited about that. We also use AI to synthesize a lot of the data that we're pulling in from different places. Every creator in the future will have an agent that allows them to action that data. So you say, can you please pull me my top purchasers or my top listeners, or pull them together and create a group chat. There'll be an AI agent that would assist you in the creator dashboard to help you with actioning some of those analytics. And then from a fan perspective, we're working on something by way of creating derivative works through Gen AI. I think it's interesting, and everyone is going to have AI as the sixth man in their team to get some of this stuff done. It's really left up to your creative interpretation of what you can do with it.
And I think more broadly at Range, we have somebody literally on our team that focuses every day on what are the AI tech that is going to, again, less so on synthetic scripts and sort of these things that I think potentially take power away from creatives. But our responsibility is to figure out the things that allow them more time to be creative. On the development side, we actually announced end of last year that we have a partnership with an incredible platform called Avail, which right now does incredible kind of script summarizations, character breakdowns, allows us to spend more time reading and analyzing and finding new material for our clients so that we can find lookalike IP when somebody's passionate about something, but somebody's already optioned that book. We can actually use AI now to find things that have similar thematics that would pair well with the same filmmaker. We're already using it for research, insight, sentiment analysis. We're putting everything into Notion so that we can, I think, as a company, have a better set of information flow. And like so many companies, digital transformation, at the end of the day, it's about how you're figuring out internal data sharing. And then where we're going with it, we're already using it for IP scouting. We're co-building pilots with some AI partners that are helping to do things like flash budgeting, et cetera, that I think will, again, help more creative projects get made, which is our North Star of like, how do you empower these folks both in front of and behind the camera? We've been really excited by things like metaphysic and things that allow artists to potentially do reshoots in a different way, or think about, you can't travel for, you know, we have a bunch of clients who now have kids and they don't necessarily want to travel. How can we use forefront technologies to allow them to do what they want to do? And I think we're seeing it across the board in how we discover new talent, which is super, super exciting, and how we surface the next generation of creators and creatives, which I think democratizes opportunity to be creative in general. So we are, as a company, quite leaning into AI, and we think that it's going to empower the future, but in a way that always has the North Star of, we don't want to put creatives out of work. And so we're really excited about the companies that have proactively come to us to say, let's use this to enable more creativity and not to rewrite the West Wing or some of the stuff that you've seen in the past.
Michelle, Natalie, thank you for spending so much time with us. I guess my final question is, you talked about the Jack Harlow project. You've teased out that there's some other stuff coming. What's the timeline? When should we expect to see more from Myth? And how should we be tracking if this is successful or not?
Yeah, great question. This summer, we launch our beta with a cohort of creators, which is why it's important. If you are a creator that thinks this is a solution for you, please go to myth.io and apply to become a creator. And then success for us looks very different than most beta launches. I think for us, it's applying the community stack that we've created into different verticals, things like music, film, TV, sports, health and fitness. And really our goal is by the end of Q4 to have 100 creators on the platform.
We will be rooting for you then. And I know if Natalie and Michelle have anything to do with it, that you all will fly past that goal. So congratulations, ladies, on everything that you're building with Myth. It's been amazing to have you on the podcast and can't wait to see you at a show sometime soon.
Yes, for sure. And thank you guys for I've loved the podcast for a long time, but I think the way that you're making this relatable, the way that you expanded even how you're defining Gen Z to not be crypto, but just connected consumers and create this kind of discourse between technology and the creative industry needs to be happening. And I think there's no better forum to be able to talk about stuff like this. And it's just very exciting to be on the radar of CoinDesk and people like this. So we're excited for the platform, but also just excited the conversations happening around how technology can empower creativity.
We appreciate that. We'll sign up at myth.io as creators now. Yes. Because we are clearly at the forefront of our field.
By the way, podcasters, major.
Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, good luck. We will keep our eye out for Myth and everything you guys are working on.
Thank awesome. You so much.
Take care.
All right, Avery, it looks like we have to build a new community from what I just heard from Natalie and Michelle. I guess we're mythers now.
We're mythers. We're moving to myth. Gen Z, watch out.
What do you think of what we just heard?
Natalie has such an amazing career, is helping these big talents like navigate these big waves of technology. And she's all in on this idea. And it was really interesting for me to hear her anecdotes of what artists actually want, because nobody knows that better than her. And she's built a platform that really answers that question. And then, of course, brought in amazing people like Michelle to help productize it. So I'm fired up.
Same. I think it reminded me a little bit of when we talked to Toki Monsta and to like Ben Leventhal, just people who are utilizing these technologies are hiding the Web3 behind. They're not really talking about Web3 specifically. They're more thinking about AI and emerging technology, but really about direct connection with brands, restaurants, etc., with their fans, because in a Web2 world, that all got stripped away. And I think that we need these types of platforms. And frankly, it might take the people like a Jack Harlow or some of the other talent that we got a sneak peek at who they're going to be bringing on, because they have such large loyal followings that it's a lot easier for them to prove a primitive out than it is for a mid-level creator or a B2B podcast like ourselves to get enough critical mass. But you almost need them to pioneer so that we can go there at some point if we wanted to.
Yeah, I think this time will tell on this, but if Jack Harlow makes it work, of course he's going to make it work because he's Jack Harlow. Right. Can Sam and Avery make it is a very different question, but we do need to see the success stories. And I think the big thing that I'm interested to see play out is they're both big believers in blockchain, but when exact does it take Jack Harlow to get his fans really caring about that? Or do they even need to care if the experience is just what they expect from Web 2? So that's what I'm interested to see play out, but I have all the confidence in the world that they know what they're doing. They've got the right talent. Like, you really can't get bigger than some of the artists that they have and are taking a real swing here.
Yeah. And I feel like we talked about last week with Starbucks tried a Web3 play and kept it to the side as Web3. This whole platform is built on Web3, but they don't talk about Web3 at all. And so I think to your point, the Jack Harlow fans aren't going to care whether it's on Polygon or it's on Optimism or it's any of these blockchains. They're going to care about, do they get a better experience with Jack Harlow because they love him. And that may be the right way to get more people onto blockchain when it really comes down to it.
I agree. All right. Sam, always wonderful to see you. Cannot wait for next week's Gen Z. If you want to leave a raving review like Natalie, feel free. Tag our bosses. I'm just kidding, but it is always so nice to hear folks share their perspectives on what they learn in this podcast, what they like about this podcast, and you know what they think that we can do as we continue evolving our definition of C.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Hopefully this is the last time you hear this ad, because with Chime checking account, features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, you can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade to spend more time listening to your favorite podcasts, or at least grab yourself an extra morning latte this month. Join millions of Chime members who work on their financial progress with fee-free overdraft and no monthly fees. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.